Hello, and welcome to the Church on the Hill podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we invite you to join us live this Sunday at 500 Sands Drive in San Jose, California. Visit churchonthehill.com for service times and directions, and also to learn more about connecting, growing, and serving at Church on the Hill. Now, please enjoy our sermon at Church on the Hill.
If you are a Jewish person living at this time, this date has been on your calendar for almost a year. It's been ominously sitting there for almost a year, and you've been looking at it, and you've talked with your friends, and you've talked with your family, and you've talked with those around you, but you are just, the anticipation couldn't be higher. And this date's been circled, and you've known that it's coming, but even with knowing that it's coming, you don't know what it's going to bring. And you remember almost a year ago when an edict came to your area that said, from Haman with the king's signet ring, every single Jewish person can be destroyed. Your neighbors, your friends, those people around you, everyone that you do life with, everyone surrounding you is now allowed to take you out. And if they take you out, they can take out your wife and they can take out your kids and they can take all of your stuff. And you would remember so clearly the pit in your stomach as you realized, what do we do? Do we flee someplace else? This kingdom's so big, I don't even know if we can get out of it. We're literally going to be decimated, and the king put his signet ring on it, which means we can't do anything about this, and it can't be revoked, and this day's been coming, but you're just stuck. But then you hear the story. You hear that Mordecai, who is a Jew also, he went to his essentially surrogate daughter, and she became queen. And Esther sits in a different position than the rest of you, and she has different power than the rest of you. And she risked her life, and she went before the king, and she said, would you please save my people? And the king extended the golden scepter, and he said, yes. And then you would clearly remember hearing the stories about Haman and how he wanted to kill Mordecai, and literally the gallows and the pole that he was going to impale him on, in turn, he got impaled on. Craziest change of events you could possibly imagine. But there's still a problem. If the king puts an edict out, it cannot be changed and it cannot be revoked. And so you are still sitting in your community with your friends, your family, those people around you, and you're still looking at this day knowing, anyone who wants can kill me and take my stuff. And then you get the good news. Esther went before the king again. She risked her life again for you. And though they can't get rid of what the king put into play, Mordecai's written a different edict. And Mordecai's edict reads that the Jews can now fight for themselves. And if there's an enemy that's going to attack the Jews, they can attack them. And he even takes it farther and says, you can attack their women and their children, and then you can plunder their stuff. So now we have two warring edicts. But the day's arrived. And you still don't know what's going to happen. There's still the tension, there's still the stress, there's still the anxiety, but the good news is you found out because of Mordecai and because of his power, Mordecai now has more sway than we ever thought he would. And now there's some officials and there's some people that are going to help you and your people. You've got backup you didn't think you had. But when the day gets here, it's still time to fight. And the truth is this, in this society, at that time, it is kill or be killed, and you don't know which side you're going to be on. And the day arrives, and fighting breaks out, and fighting escalates, and it goes all throughout the entire kingdom to the point that Esther goes to King Xerxes, and Xerxes says, I've been told that over 500 people have been killed in Susa alone. What's happened throughout the rest of the kingdom? And then he says, but Esther, what else do you want? And Esther says, King, there's still people that are opposed to us, and we want another day to fight them. And on top of that, I want Haman's 10 sons, the evil man that put this into play, the evil man that made his choice. I want Haman's 10 sons to be impaled on a pole. And so Xerxes says, you got it. And his sons go on a pole. And fighting happens again the next day, and another 300 people are killed. And because the Jewish nation is sitting there going, we literally thought on this day we would be decimated. We were supposed to be wiped out, but instead of being wiped out, we took out all of our enemies, and now it's the ones who were opposed to us that got wiped out, so they celebrate. And not only do they celebrate, Esther and Mordecai are like, not only will we celebrate this, we will celebrate this for generations to generations, and Jewish people to this day still celebrate, period. And then in chapter 10, it pretty much says Xerxes stays king, and Mordecai rises to power and continues to take care of his people. And that right there is the end of Esther. I know, you guys are like, wait, we just did Esther? I thought that was a story. Like, was that about me or them? I know, I confused you. But if you've been with us, you just went 8 weeks through the book of Esther and you discovered all that there was in Esther. And granted, there is more and there's things that we didn't go over. And I recommend you looking into Saul's affiliation with this and 1 Kings 15 and how Haman and Mordecai have some history and all of that. Where you can take a deep breath because you just went through the book of Esther. And there are so many twists and so many turns and there's so many changes that we don't expect. But that's how this book wraps up. There is a huge fight. Those edicts come to be. We knew the edicts were coming and the Jewish people get liberation that they never thought they were going to have on the day they were supposed to be slaughtered. They ended up taking out their enemies. And then the book closes. And I think one of our struggles is we like it when passages have a clear meaning. And the meaning is not kill your enemies. I promise that's not what it's supposed to be. And there's parts of Scripture where we're supposed to read it and understand it and hear it, but it's not a direct application, but I think there's some observations that we're supposed to make about it. So I want to pull some observations out and talk about those this morning. And the first observation that I think we see is this. Evil is a boomerang. When we have ill intent, when we have evil wishes, when we have things that it sits in us and we want bad for others, all too often that comes right back around to us. You look at this as with what Haman did specifically. Haman wanted to kill Mordecai on the gallows, and instead, he's the one that literally died on them. He sent an edict that said, get rid of the entire Jewish nation, and instead, it was all of the people that oppressed the Jewish nation that were taken out. It's literally the evil that they put out coming right back and landing on them. And how true is that in our lives? From big things to small things, all too often when we have ill intentions towards someone else, it comes back and lands on us in the negative. This is much more lighthearted, but I remember years ago, a little Halloween story for you guys. I was out trick-or-treating. And you know how there's an age where you really shouldn't be trick-or-treating anymore? Thank you. I'm glad we all do. I was past it, okay? I'll just admit that. It was late enough that, like, you have to go late enough that the little kids are all done, and really what you're hoping for is all the buckets out front that just say, please take one, and you're like, ha-ha, phew. I know, I was the middle school kid, and it was like early middle school, and I wasn't like, hey, I'm going to bring a little bucket. It was like, I want a king-size pillowcase, and I want it full, and I need it to look like Santa's sack as I'm going down the road. Like, this is what the goal is. It's not even human to be able to eat all that candy. I don't care about that. I just want it, okay? And I had some friends, and we were all at that weird stage where we all needed just obscene amounts of candy. And so it's a little later because, I mean, it's weird to go around with like a three-year-old when you're in middle school and ask for the same thing, so you have to go later to make yourself feel slightly better. But there's also people out at that time that, you know, we'll say the demographic changes. And I remember my friends and I were walking around with our ginormous sacks of candy. And then a guy that was a few years older came up to us, and he was not known for being the nicest individual in town. And his desire was to, we'll say, create a physical altercation in which he ended up with all of the candy. Little evil plan that he had, right? Dirty Tyson. But what he didn't realize is some of the guys we were with had older brothers. And so when he came in as the big, mean, bad guy to do his evil, there was also some other bigger, meaner, badder guys. They weren't really the bad guys, but we're going with it. And instead of Tyson taking everyone's candy, turns out Tyson left with no candy. Why? Because so often, even in small things, when we have ill intent, when we want bad for other people, somehow it just comes back and lands on us. Be careful what you wish and what you desire for other people. I think as part of what Esther's we're supposed to observe is so often the ill we wish for someone else comes right back to you. There's a reason why Jesus spends so much time talking about forgiveness. There's a reason why he says, vengeance will be mine. There's a reason why he says, leave it to me. Because often when we take it in our own hands, it doesn't go right and it comes right back to us. I'm not going to dive too much into this, but there are some marriages in the room that are literally functioning off that principle right now. You did it. You do it. You're this. And because of that, it's coming right back to you. And now you live in a house of it. Be careful with what you desire for someone else. The next observation I think we're supposed to make is this. There is a corruption of power in this passage that is so clear. King Xerxes is a mess the entire time. Haman, when put in power, literally has someone that just won't bow to him. And he says, you know what? I'm killing all of you. And for a lot of us, we think when life gets hard, when we're suffering, when things are difficult, that's when the bad things come out of us. And I would actually argue the opposite, that a lot of times when life is hard, when things are difficult, that's when we rise up and the best comes out of us. When we're challenged and when we're pushed, a lot of times that's when the good things come out of us. But the test of a person, I believe, is really if you put them in power and give them comfort. If you give them authority and you give them power and you give them comfort, then what comes out? Because I think the truth is that a lot of times the evil inside of us comes out more when we're put in positions of power and authority than it does when we're in suffering and struggle. And so my question for all of us in this room is, when I am given authority, when I am given power, when all of a sudden the people that I used to report to become the ones that are reporting to me, what do I do? How do I use that authority? How do I use the power that I'm gifted? It's like what you see all the time, you know, like middle school. I'll go back there. When you're a fifth or sixth grader, whatever it is, man, is it different how you treat people than when you're the seventh or eighth grader. Why is it that when we get in positions of authority, when we get in positions of power, that all of a sudden what comes out of us becomes something that we probably really don't want to come out of us? So when you're given authority, when you're given power, what do you do with it? And what comes out of you? The next observation is this. Bryce brought this up in week one. The book of Esther never mentions God. At no point is God mentioned. But yet, as we've read through this and as we complete Esther today, I hope you guys see so clearly and so evidently God is throughout this entire story. Why is it that Xerxes can't fall asleep? Why is it that his servant opens to a specific spot in the history of his kingdom? Why is it that everything switches? Why is it that Mordecai rises to power? Why is it that all these things that have almost no probability of happening happen? Because God. We ask this question, is Mordecai or is Esther supposed to be the hero of the story? The hero of the story is God. And what I think is so important for us to see is that in a society and in a world that was full of evil, that never mentioned God, that was not seeking God, and that really was kind of considered God irrelevant, God was absolutely active and God was absolutely moving. When we're at a place where we feel lost, where it feels like a struggle, where it feels like God's not present, all too often, God is doing way more than we could ever even imagine. In your life when it's hard, in your life when you're struggling and when you don't see God, all too often, God is doing more than you could even fathom. I've heard a saying that a lot of the time we're aware of about two things God is doing in our life when there's probably over 100,000 going on. But we have to see in this book of Esther and in our lives, even when it's not obvious, God is so incredibly active. And the last thing is this. The last observation I want to take out of this is there is a celebration that takes place. Literally two-thirds of chapter 9 is dedicated to the implementation of the celebration of Purim. And what that means is this. Haman decided the date that the Jews were going to be taken out by rolling dice, but at that time it would be called Pur. So he rolls the Pur, and that's how the date is chosen, that the Jews are going to be taken out. So essentially, to just throw it back in their face, the Jews create this date called Purim, which is just the plural of Pur. To essentially say, hey, Haman, what you intended for bad completely flipped around and became the liberation of the Jews. When you intended to get rid of every Jewish person, instead we got rid of all of the Jewish enemies. And so the Jewish nation is saying that has to be celebrated, and they celebrate it when they win that victory. But Mordecai and Esther go farther to say, not only will we celebrate this now, we will celebrate this from generation to generation forever. My question for us is, what do we celebrate and remember that God has done? I know we have Christmas and we have Easter, but in your life, where is it that you remember what God has done for you specifically to celebrate and to honor him? Because the truth is this. If we don't remind ourselves of it, we very, very easily go to the other side. There is something in us where it's just easier to go to the negative. It's easier to go to the other side. And I can prove it to you. Think of someone in your life right now, your spouse, your boss, your teacher, your friend, your child, your parent, whatever. If they sent you a text message that said, hey, I need to get a couple minutes with you just face to face, me and you alone, so we can talk. See? All of you, your minds were just like, oh no. If you're a student, you're like, how'd the teacher find out? What did I do? If you're a spouse and things are okay, you're like, oh no, it's a medical thing. If you're a spouse and you're fighting, you're like, oh gosh, here we go. If it's your boss, you're like, fired, I'm fired, it's over, I'm fired. We have this belief that's wired into us where we just assume what's coming is bad. And it really hurts the fact that God is in love with us and God sent his son for us and God has redeemed us and it says every good and perfect gift is coming from him. Then our expectation shouldn't always be, oh, here we go. But to help our minds switch and to help see things differently, we have to wire and actually remember, wait, God has delivered me over and over. God has provided over and over. God has showered me with good things over and over. But if I don't keep that at the forefront of my mind and I don't remind myself that, I lose that. And then the expectation just becomes, oh no, the other shoe's going to drop. And for so many of us, our mental struggle resides right there where the expectation is the negative is always on its way. Remember what God has done. Celebrate what God has done. Honor what God has done and put it at the forefront of your mind so you can actually trust that and believe that. All right. Those are the observations. And you guys are like, well, that was quick. You're right. 10 minutes early. No, just kidding. I'm going to shift gears on you guys right now. And I'm going to be very transparent, okay? And here's the truth. I'm probably not allowed to say this. I don't love the book of Esther. I know you're like, nope, you're a pastor, can't do that. You're fired. But here's why I want to say that. And I'm going to clarify that. It's not that I don't love the book of Esther. I struggle with it sometimes, but it's this. I struggle with our desire to sanitize Esther. I struggle with what we do with books of the Bible where things are messed up and it's really hard to wrestle with and it's hard to come to grips with. So we put like this little churchy Band-Aid on it. We're like, it's okay. And it's not just Esther. We do this all over the place. You look at King David, and we're like, King David is a man after God's own heart. Absolutely, and that's true. Have you seen the end of his life? It's a dumpster fire. But we don't like to talk about that part. And in Esther, we have the same struggle. You look at the start of Esther, and this is, sorry, we're getting a little more like PG-13 here, but the truth is this. At the start of Esther, Queen Vashti is kicked out. The reason why Queen Vashti is kicked out is because she doesn't do what Xerxes wanted. What Xerxes wanted, according to most scholars, is to have her show up in her crown. Just her crown, for all of his friends to just check out. And she says, nope. And odds are really high she's killed for it. If not, she's at least banished for it. And then the way that they replace the queen, his great advisors, they say, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. You should get all the pretty virgins in the entire area and bring them in for what we call a beauty pageant. It's not a beauty pageant. You don't need virgins for a beauty pageant. And after they spend the night with the king, they leave as a concubine as part of his harem. It's not a beauty pageant. It's closer to sex trafficking. And then we look at it and we're like, well, she won God's favor. Is that what that is? Did she? And then it continues on. And you have this war, and it says a bunch of people joined the Jewish nation, and we're like, yeah, they discovered who God was, and they saw his power, and they wanted to be a part of it. It literally says they were just trying not to die. It wasn't God, or it could have been, but there's a high probability it was just self-preservation. And we love to take the passages, and we love to take things like that, and even at the end of it, we have the Jewish nation is going to, there's a genocide that's about to take place. And instead it wraps up with essentially a reverse genocide. It says over 75,000 people were killed. And that one I can understand a little bit more because historically it was kill or be killed. But here's the thing, it goes a little farther and Esther goes to Xerxes and she says, hey king, here's what I want. Haman's dead sons. Take the 10 of them and impale them on a pole. I want to send a message. And I get it. I don't live at the time. I don't understand the pressure Esther was under. I don't understand all those different things. But here's the truth. It seems like the ways of the world are also pretty deeply ingrained in all of this. And it's so much easier, especially at church, when we have the hero of the story and we have the Daniel type that do the right thing. And even when their life is on the line, they go, you know what? I'm just going to trust God. That's how it is. Whatever comes of it, fine. But we get a story like this and we don't have that character. But we try to make it that character. It's what I call putting lipstick on a pig. We try to make it look like something that it's not. Or at least there's a really high chance that it's not. And the reason why I struggle with it, the reason why I think this is so important, the reason why I think this is a big deal is because when we polish that and have to make it look better, then we also believe that when we walk into this room on a Sunday, we have to polish ourselves and make ourselves look better too. We come to church and it's one of the fakest places we are. We show up as an inauthentic addition of ourselves because we believe we have to, because it's supposed to be polished and we're supposed to earn it. And I see some of you squirming in your seat right now because you know this and you feel this. But the truth that I think we have to see in Esther is God used broken, messed up people in spite of them, not because of them. The hero of this story is God because he uses people that don't deserve it and they're not qualified, and he's the point, and he's why they're redeemed, and he's the goodness in them. And what that's doing is foreshadowing to Jesus, and guess what? You're the same thing. And so am I. Esther is messy. This book is messy. She did a lot of things wrong. There were a lot of choices where she went along with the society where we could sit there and go, yeah, that's not really what you're supposed to do. And yet God uses her and God blesses her and God is incredibly active in her life. And the message all of us, I think, need to hear so much is instead of coming to church and coming to these gatherings and going, let me try to hide my shame and hide my guilt and put all this effort into who I am as though God needs me to be this specific person, I'm begging us to say, you know what? Let's lay that down and understand it's not about me, it's about God. You're a mess. I'm a mess. God knows. It doesn't disqualify us. It doesn't mean he's not active. It doesn't mean we didn't earn it. Well, actually it does, but we never earned it and we weren't supposed to. We love trying to polish it because then we get the good guys and the bad guys and we get to tell ourselves, I'm a part of the good guys and I'm not a part of the bad guys and I get to separate it out. But the truth is, the only thing that's ever separated us out is God's forgiveness and God's love through his son, Jesus Christ. And either you've accepted it or you haven't, but your actions have not qualified you and they can't. And for some of you, I think really what this is just permission to be who you are and be where you're at. There's stuff in your life, yeah. Same with everyone else in here. But when we try so hard to polish it and we try so hard to fake it, we come in thinking about us and thinking everyone else has got it figured out. I'm the only one that's messed up. And you know who else is thinking that? Everyone. But then we spend our time focused on us and focused on our stuff and focused on how we can hold it together. It's never supposed to be about us. The hero of Esther's story is not Mordecai, and it is not Esther. It is God. And the hero of your story and the hero of my story is God. And he didn't base it on what I've done or whether I've earned it. It's based on him and his goodness and his activity in my life in spite of me, not because of me. And for everyone in this room, I think we need to remember that. Why is Esther messy? Because so are you, and so am I. But that doesn't mean God's not working. It doesn't mean God's not involved. It doesn't mean God doesn't care, and it doesn't mean God's not still taking care of you. But the point in the hero is God, and it's not us. Let me pray. Lord, I thank you for this morning. Lord, I get the sense that there's people in this room that this has sat pretty heavy, Lord. Lord, for everyone in this room that is currently struggling, Lord, I ask that your grace would show up in an incredible way. Lord, as there's sniffles, it means you did something. So, Lord, we thank you for that. We want to honor you. And, Lord, we're grateful. And, Lord, for those individuals, I ask that you would specifically connect with them, Lord. That you would give them the reminder that you are their identity. Lord, that the old life died with you. You're not here to just make us a better version of what we previously were, Lord. It's time to get rid of the old life and take on the new life. And the identity is in you, not what we've done. God, I ask that freedom would get into people's hearts. That even though we're messy and we're broken, Lord, you're so much bigger than that. Lord, I thank you for your redemption and for your forgiveness. And I ask that that would sit deep in people's souls this morning. And that we would carry that identity with us as we leave this room, Lord. Lord, I thank you so much for who you are and for that gift. Amen.